Welcome once again to On Mic with Jordan Rich. This is a podcast all about the voices we hear on radio and TV. Also about actors and producers and creators who focus on, yes, the human voice, one of the most fascinating of instruments, as well as other areas in the arts. I'm very excited to secure my next guest, one of the busiest voice artists in the field today. His name is Jim Cutler. He's heard on dozens and dozens of radio and TV stations in just about every major market in the U.S. He's the voice of these stations. He also voices network programming, news shows, commercials, documentaries, and in a moment you'll understand why he's in such demand when I play you a sample. Jim is also a professional photographer, an ardent sports fan, an astronomer, an urban hiker, a fan of weather and coffee in New York, and an all-around nice guy. But I'd love you to give a listen to a voice you probably know quite well. Here he is, Jim Cutler.
We are one community. We don't always agree, but we're all passionate about the city, state, and world we live in. And we can all count on one place where all sides are represented. Doesn't just break.
The head of the FBI fired.
We really want all the facts.
It splinters in different directions.
Fiery new rhetoric from North Korea.
And our trusted NBC News journalists will guide you through every one. Growing up is hard.
The other kids, they think I'm weird.
Being different, even harder.
If I concentrate hard enough, I can make things move.
24 sexy singles, one hot bachelor, and a preacher? Match made in heaven, new next Wednesday at 8, only on WeTV. The wait is over. Rivals clash once again. The Dodgers look to settle the score with the defending world champion, Chicago Cubs.
The season finale of E60, Tuesday 7 Eastern on ESPN.
You've been busy bringing the color.
Glorious!
Now we're showing off your work in a week of colorful new SpongeBobs.
You have to keep your skull numb.
Now we're numbskulls!
This summer, the Fairly Odd Parents...
Good morning, Timmy!
...comes to life. A Fairly Odd Movie. Grow up, Timmy Turner. Saturday, July 9th at 8, only on Nickelodeon.
I will begin by saying welcome to the podcast. It's great to actually speak with the man I've heard for many, many years all over the country. How are you doing there, Jim?
I'm really good, Jordan, and I've heard you for many years, too.
Well, we've both been gas bags, and we get paid for it, which is a great thing. I've got to ask you, though, where Jim Cutler comes from originally, because I thought you had a Boston address for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was born in New York, but all my formative years were in Boston, and 15 years in Boston.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture on your website, jimcutler.com, taken by your wife, I believe, by Dawn, and it says Newbury Street. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's great, man.
Boston is very much home. I was just there. I just saw the last Sox game of the season.
So it's a sad memory, but still. Mm-hmm. So let me start by asking you where this whole thing started for you and how, because you obviously have the pipes, but to become as well-respected and well-known in the industry takes some doing. Where did this all start for you, Jim?
Thanks. In radio, I was pretty driven when I was growing up in New York. I was already working in high school at three different radio stations, and then I think I was the youngest person on the air in New York City. I was during college. I was at 18 and a half, something like that. After college, then I went to the typical radio journeyman path from city to city. I was in Detroit and Hartford, and then settled in Boston, and then that's where I stayed. And then from there, I got a voice job doing another radio station. That grew, and then my first TV station, then many, and then networks. And, you know, if you work hard enough at anything, hopefully it will come about, and I got lucky.
Well, tell me about the first job in New York, because my first gig in Boston, I was only 18 and a half myself at the old WRKO, and that's a long story, but where were you? What station?
It was called 99X, WXLO. I think those call letters are in Worcester now. Or
they are, yeah.
They were. But that was in New York City, and it was really crappy for me because I grew up with Top 40 radio. That's what I wanted to do, to talk records up and jingles and all that sort of stuff. And as soon as I got there, radio changed, and we went through about a 2-year period of talking up records was uncool.
Yeah, I remember those.
And
days.
Jingles were bad and all that stuff. And then Z100 came along after 2 years of radio with none of that. and cleaned everybody's clock with talking up records and with jingles and everything else. So unfortunately, I came along at the wrong time.
Well, it's interesting, though, you and me, we share a lot of the same kind of drives, because I was listening to some of my favorite jocks in the 60s and my favorite talk show host, and I'm sure you did the same thing. And you just wanted to be those guys, and to do it at 18 and a half in New York City is quite a heady trip, man.
Yeah, it was, again, incredible luck. I mean, there's definitely drive. I mean, while other people were, my whole life, while other people are playing golf or partying, I'm working all the time. And that's the way it was back then. I just went to, got on the train and went from place to place and auditioned. I flew to different cities and, you know, while people were still doing their math finals in high school try to get jobs. I just got lucky. And it was really tough, because in the beginning, it was a real flighty, and you don't have any leverage of any kind. And you really could be fired at any particular second. As a matter of fact, it still is that way. But back then, it was really that way. And I guess so many people screw up, and so many people are lazy, that if you're just competent and show up,
oh boy,
you know,
that's the mantra,
you know, isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
And so that's you know, wasn't any that I have any great talent. I mean, my mailman, I'm always saying, has a much better voice than I do. It's you know, there's always a better looking person, there's always a, you know, more talented person. I think a lot of it has to do with just being competent and not screwing up.
Well, I think too, in your case, and I'm going to share a little third wall breakage here with the audience. You were so humble when I asked you if you'd be a guest here. You said, no one wants to hear from me. And of course, I talked you out of that. I twisted your arm, because you're a voice that is nationally known. People may not know the name associated with it necessarily, but nationally heard in just about every major market, and whether it's on radio or TV stations or commercials, you are everywhere, and you've built a beautiful, I think, a beautiful sort of self-employable business here. Quantifying that and talking about how you cultivated this, I mean, you started out with one or two stations. How did you build it to where it is today? Just simply auditioning and keeping up the fight, or what?
It's mostly word of mouth. In the beginning, I did advertise, you know, in no particularly brilliant way. Back then, you would put ads in radio and records and stuff like that, which was the industry trade paper back then.
Right, right.
But I haven't advertised in an awful long time, and I try to kind of live below the radar. It's not that I'm shy, although that is part of it. It's that I can't stand the way most voice people conduct themselves. And, you know, I'm not saying anybody should do anything any differently. Everybody has to do their own thing. But today, the reason I don't want to be on the map is somebody will say, hey, I just voiced a tag for the local Exxon station, and then take a selfie and put it up on social media. And, you know, that doesn't get you any jobs at all. That just makes you look really
petty.
I think, I really do. I mean, the only way you get jobs is by being recommended by somebody or then auditioning. And and that's why I don't have any demos on my website. Someday I may, but I don't even have any demos anywhere, because all that stuff is just impressing other voice people. It doesn't get you any jobs. And again, I just do what's right for me, and I'm not putting anybody down or it's just my personal opinion as to how to conduct yourself.
One of the things about you that I'm going to note here is your consistency. I've heard you for years, and obviously you keep your voice in great shape, but you're consistent. And it's one thing to do a commercial or a series of commercials for a client and so forth, and then move on and do a narration for another client. But if I'm right about this, you are pumping out stuff on a daily basis for markets all over the country. So how do you retain that sense of consistency and quality if you have any tips for those listening, or if you just want to share what it is you do to stay in good shape.
I don't. I mean, I get sick every 2 or 3 years and get, you know, you get a week of laryngitis or something like that. But otherwise, you know, you speak from your stomach, from your diaphragm, right, which allows you to go all day long without injuring your voice. I learned that from hearing about who played Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews.
Yes. When she had the throat surgery.
She was on Broadway. She was a Broadway. She was very well trained, and she could bark out that Cockney accent and speak very loudly and not lose her voice. And all her understudies would lose their voices. And she told the story about she was trained to speak from her stomach. So that's what I do. And then you can go 18 hours a day. But if you speak from your throat and you're trying to crunch up your throat, you can't do that. You lose your voice very quickly.
And speaking of Julie Andrews, we all know the story that later in life she had throat surgery and had polyps and has sung again because of her training. So that's a testament to that kind of fortitude. In doing the work that you do, do you write any of the material? Because you're everywhere and some of the promos are hard sell, some of them are softer sell. Is there anything that you are able to write and offer up creatively, or is it all written for you?
It's written for me. I'm very involved with my clients at preaching content over fluff. So in that way, I contribute to writing. A lot of radio groups have me come in and talk about this, and I'm like an evangelist. today, radio has to be good content, and with the crushing debt on radio stations, and with the employees doing the jobs of 15 people, you know, one person may be programming 4 or 5 stations, an imaging director doing 5 or 6 stations when it used to be one.
Right.
The quality of content has gone way down, and people very often use services that I call zombie promos, where they'll subscribe to a service that that make empty promos that mean absolutely nothing to the listener. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Sean Hannity is, you know, a very popular talent. And what zombie promo companies do is they'll say, we provide plenty of Sean Hannity promos and you don't have to make them. You know, if you use us. And what they always do is they record Hannity's show and they look for a phrase that they take out of context. Like Sean will say, pass it to the right in some discussion that he's having, pass it to the right. So they'll grab those words and then they make a promo like this that means absolutely nothing. At the Thanksgiving dinner table, when Sean Hannity is having dinner with family, he never passes the potatoes to the left. Get it? Because, you know, political leanings. And then they'll drop Hannity and saying, pass it to the right. Sean Hannity on News 9:30 or something. And those promos are the reason, to a large extent, why radio is suffering the fate that it's suffering.
I read an article, actually an interview you did online with someone. It was very interesting, very inside baseball here, about the length of promos, the length of time, because we know the attention spans are going down and down, and people can choose so many other options. And you made a very good point. Less is more. So it's doing with your voice and your stylings. Less is more these days. You have to be right on and say 8 seconds as opposed to 30.
Oh, yeah, Jordan. I mean, you know, the most advertising agencies have announced that they're no longer making 30s for TV. You know, the 10, the 15, there's even shorter spots. I used to think, I remember getting mad when I was an imaging director, and I used to make 60-second promos, and somebody said, I forget who it was, some really experienced guy on the air said, you know, this is ridiculous. You can say stuff in 30 seconds. You don't need 60s. And I remember going home that day being really mad about it. And he was absolutely right, because once I got into TV, news promos, pretty much you have 7 seconds. And you do sometimes 2 and 3 stories in 7 seconds, which would have been unheard of to me when I was making 60s. Like, you know, how can that possibly be? Mm-hmm. But that's what people's attention spans are like today. You've got to be really short and to the point. And, you know, otherwise they're just not going to listen. By the way, instead of doing one of those empty Sean Hannity promos, what the solution is to find out what he's going to be talking about that day. There's a, you know, any talk show host, national talk show host sends a email blast to all their stations saying, this is what host is going to be, you know, hitting on today, and make a promo about that specifically, you know, coming up at 10 o'clock. Did Harvey Weinstein, you know, really, you know, do all those things, or is this just the tip of the iceberg? Is Trump going to make an executive decree on healthcare? How is it going to affect you? That's what you need real content in the imaging.
Well,
Sean Hannity always passes the potatoes to the right.
I love the work you do. Of course, I'm in Boston, as you know, and I love the work you do on the big sports station, WEEI. And, you know, it's constantly tongue-in-cheek and people making fun of each other on the air. But it's actually important because you're updating us as to what games are going to be broadcast when. You're doing exactly what you just outlined. You're doing the voice of the station without a name that most people know, but you're the voice that guides us through the day. And it's very effective, is what I wanted to say.
Thank you. EEI, the sports station in Boston, is my love, because that's where I really came of age there, helped put it on the map. And I think they lost their way for a number of years, and now they're back on course. And how they lost their way was a couple of people that replaced me remembered bits and things like that and forgot about content. And they thought that all they had to do was crank out bits, you know, comedy bits, and, right, you know, all the time. And then they would send me this copy to read that just made no sense at all. Literally a piece of copy from there during those years they'd send me was, don't wear skinny jeans are uncool. Don't wear skinny jeans. Sports radio, WEEI. I mean, and that's just, you know, and I'd shake my head saying, you know, you're just begging for the barrel room, just putting this on constantly, you know, stuff like this. And now they have done a 180, and they're really smart about content now. And that's what everybody has to do. You got to get away from the filler and actually provide content, because the phone is everything. And, you know, unless you're giving compelling content, you're dead.
One of the things that I think will hit home with you, and I before we end, I want to talk about your other artistic pursuits, including photography. Your work is outstanding. But one of the things I wanted to talk with you about is the magic that is still in audio. And you and I are probably close to the same age, so we probably grew up a little after the golden age of radio. But I'm finding now, through the podcast world that I'm involved in and through radio in general, that if given the opportunity to be creative, there's so much one can do with audio, with the amount of live sound, meaning news clips everywhere, and just imagination. I mean, is this still fun for you as it is for me?
God, it's so much fun. And I'm glad that you feel that way, too. It is. It's magic. And audio, whether it's audio books and the feeling that you get from listening to audio books that are well told and well performed, or, you know, brilliant radio people who are still doing it so well, they get it. You know, identify some kind of drama in the beginning, take the person through it, and have the resolution at the end. And that stuff is just, it's incredible. It's you and I did miss the golden age. But, you know, I think that the reason we're still doing this is because we appreciate it so much and we love it so much.
Well, that brings me to my next question. And that is a question I've asked others on this show, on this podcast. I have mentors, we all do. And I would love to know who you've met in the industry, who you've always wanted to meet in the world of voiceover, and who's really guided you, whether consciously or not. I had people who guided me. They never knew they did, but they served as guides. So just share with us any of those names or people.
Sure. Not really in voiceover. I stay away from voiceover people. When I meet voiceover people, you know, they basically, the first question is, what are your settings? What are your microphone? You know, I mean, I'd rather know you as a person, you know, or do we have something in common? I don't want to be friends with you just because you're a voiceover person. That's, you know, bring something to the table other than asking me what my settings are or what my microphones are. And plus, I mean, I've had there's many VO people are so fragile. I had a very famous voiceover woman call me out of the blue because we were working on some kind of job together. And I innocently said to her, hey, I think you're on my, you know, pleasure to meet you. I think you're on my phone system because I've got this Avaya phone system. And are you the voice, you know, that's built in? And she was so insulted. She said, I think I've come a long way now that I don't have to do voice machines. And I said, no, you're misunderstanding me. Don't you do AT&T or something? Or and it's another reminder that I'm better off just kind of staying off to myself. And
all right. Well, let me redirect and ask you about radio, because you're obviously a radio nut as I am. Yes. Growing up, who were your idols? Who did you love to listen to? Because you mentioned, you know, that era.
I'll finish your first question. People that I've met that are phenomenal people. Harry Nelson, who you might know from WRKO.
I worked for him. Are you kidding me? He was my boss. I'm still friendly with Harry.
Wonderful guy. Yeah. People who have been great to me. Carrie Pahigian.
Another great guy.
Another great guy. There's so many. There's so many good people that I've worked with. And if I go down a list, people will be mad because I've left them off. But I grew up listening to, you know, to Top 40 and wanting to do that. At the same time, I love progressive rock, too. So growing up in this part of New York, it was WPLJ when they were more on the progressive rock side, not the CHR that they are today. And 99X, you know, growing up listening to those guys that did the old RKO format with the jingle and they were so good. They were, and by the way, Harry, I believe, comes from that.
Yeah, and Harry and I were together at the 50th reunion of WRKO. I was not there in 1967 working yet, but I was there to MC this, and what a treat. The entire team from 1967, the air team, reassembled, and it was like they never left. I mean, they actually went on the air the next night at the new RKO, which was really fun.
But Did they really? Wow.
Yeah, you know, all those guys. But I always ask that question of friends, because we're all influenced by other artists. And again, we try to take our cues from those who I hope have a good message, and you strike me as a real mensch in that regard. I want to ask you about photography. Your work is online. And I also note that you're into astronomy. So here we have one of the most beautiful shots of the space shuttle. And I got to ask you how close you were to take that shot, because it looks like you were on the launch pad with them.
Yeah, I get to go to NASA and shoot in the press area, which is really fun. There's some awesome people in photography. When I'm at baseball games sometimes and shooting down from the stands, I have had people come up to me and say, would you like to shoot on the field? And then they bring me down to the press box and I shoot from the press area. So the answer about the space shuttle is, I think 3 miles is the closest that you can be. That's where the press area is at NASA. If you get a chance to go to NASA, it is one of the greatest experiences there. It's amazing because you've seen this bigger than life thing on TV. Talk about grabbing your imagination. And then to actually walk through that building and the vehicle assembly building and be so close to the launches and feel that against your chest when they go up, they're monstrous. You can't even get an idea of how loud that is from watching it on TV. So photography is a big thing to us. We have a pretty big company that does a very bizarre type of photography. We shoot buildings coming down. We shoot for construction companies that rip stuff down, and we go out and document big things like the Meadowlands when they get imploded, and you know, giant office buildings when they're taken down. And we do that for those companies, and then they use the pictures and the films to get their next jobs.
If I were your mother, I would say, protect your eardrums.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know what? That is the greatest advice for anybody in the audio industry.
Yeah,
so I remember being told that when I was younger. Yeah. And I thought, oh, okay, old man.
You know, right. I'll go to this concert and I'll just stand right next to the amp and we'll see about that. But it's so true. Yeah.
It's so true. You're absolutely right. And I, a number of years ago, all of a sudden, I had a very light ringing in one of my ears and it didn't go away the whole day. And I said, uh-oh.
Right.
And at that moment, I don't even wear headphones anymore. And I've stopped it. So I'm still good. But I still have that very slight ringing in my ear, and I know that if I had kept headphones on, you know, all these years, that it would be a lot worse. So that's a great point by you.
Well, just something I thought of because I'm a headphone addict, and we do what we do, and we have to be wary of the fact that our listening skills are the most important part of this whole operation here. But listening to you has been a delight. You such a very warm and engaging guy to begin with, but your work it speaks for itself. I mean, it's all over the country and beyond. And I guess the nicest thing about what we do is that, we can do it from home if we have the wherewithal, and we can do it without having to shave necessarily that close. Right?
I'm wearing a tuxedo. What are you talking about? That is so true. I'll leave you just with this thought. I always say this. I don't do many of these, not because I think I'm anything special. It's just the opposite. I call it I'm in the plumbing end of show business. There's just nothing that's too interesting about this. I think people that go on and make a big deal out of themselves, like I'm in voiceovers. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good for you. But at the same time, even though we're not curing cancer, we are having a very good time. And I think radio has a wonderful future. Yes. Radio is crushing under debt. A lot of companies, but there's a lot of companies who aren't, and there will be new companies that aren't when that stuff gets resolved, because you know that debt's going to get going to get taken away by some sweet deal, you know, and a lot of signals are going to be much more debt free at some point, and there'll be new companies, and this will continue to evolve, and I think radio is going to be a piece of the pie. I'm Mr. Technology, and I know what's coming, just like you do, and how people say that broadcast radio is on the decline, but it's not going to go away. It's definitely going to be a piece of the media pie, and I hope to be in it because I love this.
And if this were 1935,
oh my God,
or 1955, when movies came in or when TV came in, the same quotes were said then by smart people who love this business. It is such a gas to do what we do. And the fact that I believe, and I know this to be true with you because I've followed your career, you're leaving a legacy, and it's not just your voice, but it's impacting the jobs and the economies of various people. I mean, in a weird way, it's kind of a nice thing to know that at the end of the day, you did something artistically that made you a meal ticket, but also helped some other people, perhaps. Maybe put a smile on their face. Again, we're not curing cancer, but we're certainly doing something to leave the world a better place. Jim, you're a delightful guy, and I really thank you for saying yes. I got down on one knee, and you said yes. So thank you.
Very much, Jordan. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
And by the way, jimcutler.com is where people can see your wonderful photography, some samples of it, and find out more about you. So all the best, and to your lovely bride as well.
Thank you, sir. See you.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions, on the web at chartproductions.com. And please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on iTunes and most other podcast platforms. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.